Greetings, and welcome to the Industrial Alliance third quarter earnings results conference call. During the presentation, all participants will be in a listen-only mode. Afterwards, we will conduct a question-and-answer session. At that time, if you have a question, please press the one followed by the four on your telephone. If at any time during the conference you need to reach an operator, please press star zero. As a reminder, this conference is being recorded on Wednesday, November 3rd, 2021. I would now like to turn the conference over to Marie-Annick Bonneau, Head of Investor Relations. Please go ahead.
Good afternoon and welcome to our third quarter conference call. All our Q3 documents, including press release, slides for this conference call, MD&A, and supplementary information package are posted in the Investor Relations section of our website at ia.ca. This conference call is open to the financial community, the media, and the public. I remind you that the question period is reserved for financial analysts. A recording of this call will be available for 1 week starting this evening. The archive webcast will be available for 90 days, and a transcript will be available on our website in the next week. I draw your attention to the forward-looking statement at the end of the slide package. A detailed discussion of the company's risk is provided in our 2020 MD&A, available on SEDAR and on our website. I will now turn the call over to Denis Ricard, President and CEO.
Good afternoon, everyone, and thank you for joining us on the call today. As usual, I will start by introducing everyone attending the call on behalf of IA. First, Jacques Potvin, Chief Actuary and CFO. Mike Stickney, Chief Growth Officer and responsible, among other things, for our U.S. operations. Alain Bergeron, Chief Investment Officer. René Laflamme, in charge of individual insurance and savings. Sean O'Brien, responsible for our mutual fund business and wealth management distribution affiliates. François Blais, in charge of dealer services, special markets, and IA Auto and Home. And Éric Jobin, responsible of our group businesses. IA Financial Group's third quarter results released this morning are solid and exceed expectations in many respects. They are a very good indication of the soundness and robustness of our business model. Indeed, as we continue to be focused on the execution of our strategy, sales momentum remains very strong, the investment portfolio and financial position are robust, and profitability is very high. Slide 4 presents 6 key performance indicators. All of them are very solid. Starting with profitability, core EPS of $2.23 for the quarter is again above guidance. This result raises the profit for the first 9 months of the year to $6.31, which is 21 cents above the top end of our year-to-date target range. Core ROE of 14% is at the top of guidance and in the middle of the mid-term target range of 13 to 15% that we wish to move forwards by 2023, as announced at our March 2021 investor event. This metric is on a trailing 12-month basis and demonstrate the strength of our last 4 quarters. The next 2 metrics are reflective of our tremendous growth momentum. First, premium and deposits total a solid $4.1 billion, up 4% above a very strong quarter last year. As of AUM of more than $214 billion, it represents a significant 15% increase over the last 12 months. Our capital position is solid with 131% solvency ratio, up by 1 percentage point, to which should be added our distinctive market protection, now equivalent to 8 percentage points. Finally, we place great emphasis on growth in our book value since it represents the actual value added for our shareholders. This ratio, which has been growing on average by 10% per year for over 20 years, has increased by 12% in the last 12 months, a great performance. Now turning to slide 5, which illustrates our business mix. Starting with foundation businesses in which we already have a well-established leadership position, individual insurance, wealth management, and dealer services in Canada all exceeded profit expectations in Q3. As for sales, the very strong momentum continued in individual insurance and for net fund entries in wealth management. As you know, our strength in distribution, our high-performance digital tools, and our broad product offering are the main factors supporting our success in retail insurance and wealth. In our support businesses, I want to highlight another quarter of strong profitability from AE Auto & Home, our Quebec P&C affiliate. In addition to its contribution to the company's profitability, AE Auto & Home, like our other support businesses, is a source of synergies. With this in mind, and to offer our clients outside of Quebec easier access to P&C products, we announced yesterday the acquisition of 70% of Surex. Mike will comment further on this acquisition in the next few minutes. Finally, our expansion activities, which are our distinctive activities with high growth potential, performed well in the third quarter. Noteworthy are the sales in the U.S. Dealer Services Division, which grew by 33% year over year. In the context of low car inventory, this result confirms the growth potential of this market. We continue to execute our digital strategy, a multifaceted program that includes a 360 client view, operational efficiency, and talent development. By bringing together IT, client experience, and employee experience under the responsibility of Pierre Miron as Chief Transformation Officer, we've put in place key conditions for success as we move forward with this project. On another note, employees are essential to IA's success, and we are committed to being an employer of choice. This is why, as announced in August, we've opted for a hybrid and flexible approach to post-pandemic work, an innovative approach that was recently recognized by the Healthy Enterprises Group. In closing, as the COP26 conference unfolds, a word on ESG. Participating in the global effort to mitigate climate change is a priority of our sustainable development program. In addition to being carbon neutral since 2020, we're working to achieve our greenhouse gas reduction targets while analyzing how we can go even further. I will now let Mike comment further on business growth. Following Mike's remark, Jacques will provide more information on our Q3 earnings and financial strength. I will pass it over to Mike.
Thank you, Denis, and good afternoon, everyone. With double-digit business growth in several of the group's sectors, Q3 sales matched the performance recorded in previous quarters. Sales were solid even when compared to a very strong third quarter in 2020, thanks to a diversified business mix that allows for synergies and complementary products sold between business units. Individual insurance and wealth management added another great performance to their recent string of successes. We also saw strong results from U.S. dealer services despite the low vehicle inventory environment. These results further confirm the strong growth potential of this segment, which contributes to the increasing proportion of capital-light products in our business mix. Now, please refer to slide 7 as I will comment on Q3 sales results by line of business. In individual insurance, strong momentum with total sales of $68 million during the third quarter, a substantial increase of 28% year-over-year that further cements our leading position in the mass/mid-market. Again this quarter, growth was supported by the combination of three factors: the strength of our distribution networks, the superior performance of our digital tools, and our comprehensive range of products. In fact, this was recently recognized by the industry when IA ranked number one overall in the advisor perception survey for the very first time. Now, looking at group insurance, employee plan sales amounted to $19 million compared to $26 million for the same period last year. As you know, sales in this sector tend to vary considerably from one quarter to another, depending on the size of the contract sold. In the Canadian Dealer Services Division, sales of $300 million are similar to those of $310 million from a year ago, a good performance in the context of vehicle inventory shortages. In the Special Markets Division, sales were up 20% year over year, driven by the sales of AD&D and critical illness. In the U.S. now, individual insurance sales of $34 million were similar to those of a very strong quarter last year and are up 6% year over year for the first 9 months of the year. In the dealer services division of our U.S. operations, sales were 33% higher than last year, resisting the industry's inventory challenges. These very good results are mainly attributable to the strong synergies between DAC and IAS. Note that the persisting low vehicle inventory situation is expected to impact sales for the remainder of the year for both dealer services divisions, both Canada and the U.S. Now, turning to slide 8 for individual wealth management, guaranteed product sales continue to be good, totaling $213 million. Looking at segregated funds, the company continued to strengthen its position in the industry and ranked first in net sales for the first 8 months of the year. Gross segregated fund sales exceeded $1.1 billion, up 58% year over year, while net sales totaled $839 million for the quarter, more than doubling year over year. As with individual insurance sales, distribution networks and digital tools have been the key to our success. Now we are enhancing our product offering with the addition of 4 new global segregated funds as recently announced to the market. As for mutual funds, sales growth was also excellent thanks to the strong performance of the fund lineup. Indeed, gross sales were up 21% year over year, and net sales recorded solid inflows of $261 million for the quarter, showing continued momentum and bringing net sales close to $1 billion on a year-to-date basis. In group savings and retirement, very good sales of $810 million compare with those of $1.2 billion a year earlier when a major insured annuity contract was signed. Finally, direct written premium in our P&C affiliate, iHome and Auto, continued their steady growth and increased 7% year over year. Overall, premiums and deposits totaled more than $4 billion during the third quarter, driven by the individual wealth management sector. In addition, growth of the financial markets and solid net inflows of funds propelled assets under management and administration to a record level and resulted in a 15% increase year over year. Turning to slide 9, as introduced by Denis, we've just announced the acquisition of 70% of a digital P&C distributor named Surex Direct. This acquisition has a high strategic value because of Surex's digital expertise and distribution capabilities. It is also a good strategic fit as Surex will act as a growth generator for the other business units, giving our clients access to the P&C market across Canada. Surex further enhances our well-established strengths in distribution, product shelf, and digital tools. In addition, it is a capital-light business expected to contribute to the ROE expansion of the company. I will now turn it over to Jacques to comment on Q3 earnings and capital strength.
Thank you, Mike, and good afternoon, everyone. Again, this quarter, results were strong and earnings were above expectations. Starting with slide 11, which compares our results with the guidance that was provided at the beginning of the year and on which you can see that both for Q3 and year-to-date results are generally in line with or better than guidance. This is true for core EPS as well as for core ROE for the trailing 12 months, a key metric that we aim to increase. Core ROE is currently at the very top of our guidance range, owing to our solid performance in the last 12 months. Also, both organic capital generation and the solvency ratio are above guidance. Finally, the dividend payout ratio reflects the combined effect of current regulatory restrictions prohibiting dividend increases and our good profitability. Now, refer to slide 12, on which we compare core earnings to reported earnings. Overall, the impact of markets was nil this quarter, and the only adjustments were for IAS integration costs, which were slightly higher than expected, and amortization of acquisition-related intangible assets and non-core pension expenses, which were close to expectations. Slide 13 presents the source of earnings for Q3 results on a core basis. First, when adjusted to exclude Q2 2020 IAS expected profit, which, as you may recall, was recorded together with the results of the third quarter of 2020, core expected profit of $255 million for Q3 2021 is up 11% year over year. This increase in expected profit can be explained essentially by organic growth, mainly high net fund entries, and the favorable impact of financial markets. In addition, policyholder experience gains contributed to the strong profitability with a 6-cent EPS gain. Experience was particularly favorable for individual insurance and dealer services in Canada. For more details regarding policyholder experience by sector, please refer to slide 22 in the appendices, where you will know that an experience loss was recorded in our U.S. Dealer Services division in Q3. A provision for sales bonuses due to the strong year-to-date sales, slightly higher claims, and timing of revenues explain this result. The latter has come about as we harmonize and refine the practices across the units of this division. This exercise, which will shortly be completed, brings some temporary volatility in the results of our U.S. dealer services. More specifically, the impact was a little negative in Q3, but the finalization of these refinements should result in a positive adjustment for year-to-date results that will be recognized in Q4. Overall, year-to-date core experience for this division has been better than expected. The next item in the source of earnings is the impact of new business, which, with a strain of 3% for Q3 and 2% year-to-date, is very close to expectation, being in the middle of our target range. IA uses a conservative approach to manage the impact of new business, and we are pleased with the current level of strain close to zero, particularly as we prepare to transition to IFRS 17. Income on capital was higher than expected in Q3, resulting in a 10-cent EPS gain. This result is essentially attributable to the very favorable experience from our PNC affiliate IA Auto and Home, mainly due to lower claim ratio, mostly from home protection. Finally, income taxes were within guidance, but slightly higher than expected, resulting in a 1-cent EPS loss. In the end, at $2.23, core EPS was 8 cents above the top of our guidance range. Moving to slide 14, which provides an update on the additional protections added to the reserve to account for the pandemic uncertainty in 2021. During the quarter, the mortality was slightly higher than expected. This resulted in an experience loss in Canada, while in the U.S. it was offset by the carry-forward provision arising from better-than-expected mortality in the first half of 2021. Please note that there is still a carry-forward provision amount available in the U.S. for potential use in the future. As for adverse policyholder behavior, the additional protection remains intact, as no adverse experience was recorded during the quarter. As shown on slide 15, we maintain a very strong financial position with a solvency ratio of 131%, well above our target range. In Q3, the increase in the ratio was supported by continued organic capital generation, while the impact of market-related variation was slightly unfavorable. Now to slide 16, which shows that the equivalent of 8 percentage points can be added to our solvency ratio to reflect our distinctive market protection, enhancing the robustness of our capital position. Organic capital generation was again very strong this quarter at about 150 million. And after 9 months, we have already exceeded our target for the year. Organic generation is highly dependent on profit, of course, but it is also correlated with the macroeconomic environment and the business mix. In Q3, all these factors had a positive impact on organic generation. I now refer you to slide 17. The annual review of actuarial assumption has begun and will be finalized in the coming weeks. Although the final outcome is still unknown, we expect a non-significant impact on the fourth quarter results. To conclude, we enter Q4 well-positioned and confident that core EPS for the last quarter of 2021 should be at the top and or above our guidance range, provided that financial market and the evolution of the pandemic remain favorable. Our good results are expected to continue in 2022, although some items that were extremely favorable in 2021, such as our PNC and car loan results, maybe less so in 2022. In closing, a few more words about the year 2022, during which we will be transitioning to IFRS 17. Our preparation for the transition continues to progress well, and thanks to our long-term and economically based management approach, we have a strong capital position and will be comfortably positioned to move under the new accounting standard. Operator, we will now take questions.
Thank you. If you are an analyst and would like to register a question, please press the 1-4 on your telephone. You will hear a 3-tone prompt to acknowledge your request. If your question has been answered and you would like to withdraw your registration, please press the 1 followed by the 3. Once again, to register a question, please press the 1-4 on your telephone. One moment, please, for the first question. Our first question comes from Gabriel Deschênes with National Bank Financial. Please proceed.
Good morning, or afternoon, sorry. I'm sure I've asked this before, but the P&C business just keeps knocking the ball out of the park here, and I'm just wondering how we should, look at, the profitability over the past three quarters relative to that, $13 million expected level that you put in your slide, excluding seasonality, whatever. Does that differential represent, what the normalization of P&C profits could be, or is this a business that's just simply more profitable than it ever has been because you've done repricing and taken other actions?
It's Denis here, Gabriel. Thanks for the question. If you look back in 2020, let's say Q2 and before that, the run rate was something around 13 million, and that's what we kept in terms of guidance. And what you've seen over the last six quarters is amazingly much better, obviously. I would say that the answer probably on a long-term basis is somewhere in between those two numbers. Because when you think about it, we've made a lot of changes in our, pricing of those products over the last several years. And we were already starting just before the pandemic to get the benefit out of it, and it was accelerating. So I would say that the long-term would be somewhere in between.
Okay, something we should talk about a bit more in detail off in another forum. Now, it's more of a philosophical, long-term picture type of question here, but if I look at this year's growth, a big chunk of it coming from IES accretion, the PNC business, auto lending, the lower loan losses, and now you've made this Surex acquisition. I mean, I'm spending more time talking about, auto-related and PNC businesses when it comes to Industrial Alliance, very little talking about individual insurance because that's, kind of not as topical these days. Do you, I know why you've structured your business in a certain way, but to be more capital light and all that, but, is the direction you're going with this company more of a, financial conglomerate type structure, or is that just the way, the trends are going these days, and your diversified business, some are doing well right now, others will pick up the slack down the road, that type of thing. Bit of a complex question there, but hoping you can talk a bit about that.
Well, hopefully I got an easy answer for that. I mean, we've shown at our investor event the three different categories of businesses, and it's still in the package. And that's the way we look at our businesses. And the way you should position Surex, for example, is really a support business. The same way as IE Auto and Home is a support business. Now, we're not buying a manufacturer, and we don't intend to be a manufacturer of PNC. We basically bought a distribution shop. But the idea is to do what we're doing in Quebec. In Quebec, we are basically making some revenue synergies out of IE Auto and Home with the referral programs with either dealerships or with the career network or, the life insurance reps. Well, we're trying to do the same outside Quebec with the acquisition of Surex. So, I mean, you can see we have a lot of businesses. We are a conglomerate, but at the end of the day, you really have to put them into categories. We have our foundation business, which are still, our main core business, individual insurance, wealth management. And the other businesses are really there, either the high growth or to support those businesses where we want to be a leader, basically, at the end of the day. Hopefully that answers your question.
It does. Do you have any stats on, cross-sell from individual insurance into PNC products in Quebec? Because it's like going the other way from, individual insurance clients in, BC or whatever to buy PNC products through you. Is there any kind of benchmark that you have for Quebec?
Well, I can tell you one thing is that when I look at the sales of IE Auto and Home in Quebec, the majority of the sales are coming from, traditional networks like the carrier networks or the dealer business, although we do some direct-to-consumer, but the vast majority comes from, I would say something around 75% comes from the synergies between other sectors.
Cool. All right, thank you.
Our next question comes from Meny Grauman with Scotiabank. Please proceed.
Hi, good afternoon. Jacques, I just wanted to make sure that I heard you correctly. I think you were suggesting some positive experience in Q4 for the U.S. dealer services business. So I just wanted to check that and if that's the case and understand better why you believe that's likely to be the case.
Thank you, Meny, for the question. Yes, right, that's what I said. Actually, we're refining the accounting. There's many different operations. IES has gone through many acquisitions in the recent past, so we are just harmonizing all the approaches and the way of accounting for those different businesses. And we thought we would be able to complete the work in Q3. We were not able, so the part that we've booked in Q3 has had a negative impact. It's part of the result. But what we have identified since that time is in positive territory, I would say between 2 and 5 cents. That's what we have, but we are not completed yet. We believe we will complete it in Q4, but so far there's positive coming, and it's really related to the business year to date.
And Cindy here, the good news is that when you look at the year in total, with the what Jacques is just saying right now, the expectation is that we're going to be higher than what was expected at the beginning of the year. And at the same time, the business is growing significantly. So far, we're pretty happy with that business.
Got it. And then just if I'm looking at it at a high level, it sounds like you're suggesting somewhat of a normalization in your P&C business, also on the credit side of the auto loan business. Where's the offset there? As you looked at 2022, what's likely to improve into next year? When I hear you talk about dealer services in particular, it sounds like supply issues will still be a problem. So where's the upside as you look to 2022 in terms of the results?
Actually, I would say it's really a tough question because, you know what, we're still in a pandemic. If you look in the U.S., I believe the life has come back to normal much more quickly than in Canada. Can we see that today they are in a normal situation? Maybe not, but they are closer than in Canada. In 2022, we will return gradually to normality. So there are things that will settle down for sure. We have had good experience, PNC, credit loan experience. We have had some negative as well. If you look at mortality, also group insurance that has been affected negatively. So it's very tough to say at which pace we will return to normal and so on. The best guidance I can provide today, and we will provide the guidance when we will disclose the Q4 result, but it will be quite a wide range that I will give you, but that's the best we can do for today. So if you use the 631 after 9 months, you add the top of the guidance provided for Q4, so it brings us to 841. I would say that you cannot expect a 10% increase over that. So this is the top, really the top of the range that you can have. And we used to increase our guidance year after year by 10%. So if you use mid-guidance of 2021 and raise it by 10%, it's the bottom of the range. So it will be in between those two, and it will vary about the pace. So we will finalize that, and we will come with a guidance with what's our best view for next year.
Thanks for that.
Our next question comes from Tom MacKinnon with BMO Capital Markets. Please proceed.
Yeah, thanks very much. Good afternoon. A quick clarification and then a follow-on question. Jacques, the 2 to 5 cents in U.S. dealer services that you identified in the fourth quarter, is that an experience gain? Is that kind of an expense experience gain, just sort of reversing what was done in the third quarter? Is that how we should be looking at that?
No, it's not a reversal of what happened in third quarter. Actually, if you look at that division, there are three types of, I would say, income. You have the admin services that you're providing. For the admin services, most of the revenue is earned in the first year because that's where most of the services is provided. If you look at, after that, the insurance part, because, of course, there's a lot of dealers. We pass some experience to a lot of dealers through reinsurance deal, et cetera, but we're keeping some of that underwriting risk as well. For this one, we sell a premium, and the premium will, the profit will be earned over the life of the contract. And after that, there's what we call a clip fee when you have an insurance company that are backing an obligor. And for that part, also, it's insurance. So this profit is earned over the life of the contract over 5 years. So we have discovered by moving to IFRS 4, I'm confused sometimes with IFRS 17, sorry for that. So we discovered that practices were not exactly the same for all the different businesses. So what we're doing now, we're moving to a similar approach for all of them. So that's really what is happening here.
Okay, so that is actually going to be an expected profit and not an experience gain, correct?
It will be, I would say, an experience gain because experience profit is already booked as the expected, but it will add to the total profit. But we will see what will be the experience of Q4. But if we would have recorded it in Q3, it would have added to the expected profit. It would have been a gain.
Okay. And if... Now, my question's on expenses, though. It seems like the expenses were higher in dealer services as a result of sales bonuses. Is that going to continue into the fourth quarter if sales continue to be strong? And then if I look in the group retirement, group savings and retirement, you had an experience loss there related to higher expenses as well. So can you talk about what drove the expense increase in the quarter? And more importantly, do you see what are you doing going forward to be able to perhaps curtail those expenses?
Okay, that's a good observation, Tom. Actually, of course, when you have such level of sales, you can expect that expenses will be higher. So it's part of the equation for sure. Another part of it also, we mentioned at our Investor Day that we have many digital initiatives. And for those initiatives, you know, there are some expenses that have to be spent. You cannot capitalize all expenses there. So this brings also some noise quarter to quarter in the different lines of business. So that's really what is happening with the expenses.
Okay, that's great. And the last question is just on the U.S. Individual insurance. You know, the sales were great in 2019 and 2020. Now, you know, the decline, is the decline year over year just because they were so good then and you can't really continue that pace? Or what's sort of happening with the market here? Why were things so good before and then they're starting to decline now with respect to U.S. individual insurance?
I guess it's for you, Mike.
Yeah, thanks for the question, Tom. You've kind of, I'd say, read the situation pretty accurately. We had a great run, you know, through, the previous 3, 4, or 5 years. Things are kind of flattening off, and I'd say the market continues to grow because, you know, the demographics as much as anything, and I think people are more interested in insurance these days. You know, I think, you know, we're continuing to work hard on growth and grow our sales, but it's probably not going to run at the rate we saw, you know, the 15, 16, 17% that we saw 3 or 4 years ago. But, you know, we're not giving up. I mean, it's just we try to grow our sales at least 10% every year. So, you know, a lot of it's just getting out there recruiting and finding new distribution. So, yeah, we continue to try to grow that business, but it is slowing down a bit.
Okay, thanks for that.
Our next question comes from Scott Chan with Canaccord Genuity. Please proceed.
Good afternoon. If I focus in on expected profit and look at your wealth management in your SIP, you did $80 million this quarter versus $67 million last quarter. I mean, the $80 million is a record high if I kind of look back. Was there something unusual that happened this quarter to drive that, or with the asset growth and the expected asset growth we're seeing in Q4, we should see that number kind of trend a bit higher?
It's really a great market performance as well as the net fund entries. That's really the sum of it here.
So if those persist, then that should be higher in subsequent quarters?
I'm sorry, could you repeat? The sound is not great. I'm sorry, Scott.
Yeah, you talked about the market performance and the net fund entries, which I think in Q4 is a lot better than Q3. So from what I'm hearing from you, that should continue to drive better expected profit going forward.
Yeah, absolutely. It's Denis here. Yeah, you're absolutely right. I mean, We do reevaluate the expected profit on in-force each quarter, and when you have a good market, good net entries, obviously, you know, this goes up.
Okay, and just on the seg fund sales, and then you launched new products, and I think the new products were, the four new products were kind of post-quarter, but is the sales within the segment more industry-related, like COVID-related, or is it more specific to IAG, you think?
This is Honey speaking. Thanks for the questions. I think you need to look at it in twofold. What we are doing at IE, and Mike mentioned it, you know, the strong distribution, the technology, as well as our fund lineup that is very, very competitive. Externally, of course, you know, we see the client behavior with the COVID, people having more savings in their pocket and the market being positive. So that's a tailwind for us that is really helping the business. So it's really in twofold, external and internal.
Okay, got it. Thank you very much.
Our next question comes from Doug Young with Desjardins Capital Markets. Please proceed.
Good afternoon. Just back on Surex, the acquisition. I just want to confirm, Denny, you're not signaling that you're looking to expand your P&C insurance manufacturing outside of Quebec. Like, that's not what this is about. And then maybe just to tag on, it looks like if I look at slide 9, you know, this business is going to lose money on a net basis over the next 3 years, but be flat on a core basis. And just curious as to what you think the return on capital, like what is the return on capital you expect to get from this business and how quickly do you get it there?
Thanks for the question, Doug. Well, the answer is very clear on your first question. We have no intention to become a manufacturer of PNC outside Quebec. It's really a distribution play here. And regarding your second point, the question was, remind me what the question was. I have the blank for
The question was the return on that.
Oh, yeah, the return. Well, in fact, for the return, it's okay. What's going on here? Obviously, when we looked at it, we basically made, you know, projections, assumptions as to the kind of synergies that we can get out of this business. And most of the synergies are going to be revenue synergies. And so we don't show it here, obviously, but... you know, we have a model where we are going to make some return out of it, and the return at the end of the day we expect will be higher than, you know, the target range that that we do target. But it includes the fact that we have some synergies in between some sectors.
And those synergies are just through your distribution partners, basically cross-selling through your agents that you deal with, P&C insurance. And I'm right that this is going to lose money on a net basis, but it's going to be flat on a core basis. Is that correct?
Well,
yes,
you're right. But at the end of the day, it does not include any synergies that we can have. You know, we have not modeled when we see that it's going to be kind of neutral or, you know, a bit negative, you know, for the next 3 years. It does not include any synergies from other businesses.
And then, what division, Jacques, is this going to be reported through?
Well, that business is going to report to the IO to win.
Okay, so it's okay. And then second on U.S. dealer services, just a few things. I mean, I think it was mentioned that your experience was negative because you had higher claims. Hoping you can maybe just unpack that. And then, Mike, the sales up 33%, you know, it was attributed to synergies. I assume that's cross-sell. Can you maybe talk a little bit about that? What are some of the key drivers for that increase of 33%? Is it mix shift? Is it anyways, I'll leave it there so you can give us a little more detail.
Okay, Mike?
Sure. He had a question before that question, but I'll leave it to you guys. On the sales side, 33% number is pretty good. The synergy issue is kind of an interesting one. You know, one of the first synergies we identified when we got into the IS file was that they were using a lot of third-party insurance companies to basically write the clip coverage on the business they sold. So we had a project going last year to transition all of that or most of that business to our insurance company, which is called DAC. And so that kicked in at basically the start of this year, and that business is now getting recorded or reported as sales for us, and that's about half of the growth that you're seeing in the third quarter. There's higher growth numbers in the previous quarters because we didn't own IAS in the first half, but at any rate, it's a better measure now. And then, you know, basically we've got some other tailwinds that have been, you know, supporting this business and good news from our standpoint. You know, I think we've done well with, you know, our sales mix. We get about 50% of our sales from used car sales or activity. And the used car market's been, you know, stronger than the new car market. You know, that's well documented. And at this point, we're starting to see increased penetration at dealerships of F&I products, which is kind of normal in a situation where you've got a market slowdown. So that's another tailwind. And finally, we've been signing up new accounts too, which you know, always helps. And so overall, very positive result. And you know, we want to keep the momentum going as best we can.
And Mike, just the first. Sorry, go ahead,
Doug. The question about claim is a little bit higher, but not that much higher, and it's normal. It's really returned to normal life, like I mentioned earlier. In the U.S., they are ahead of Canada. We see in terms of return to normal, so it's normal that claim has increased a little bit.
Okay, so nothing unusual. Okay, thank you.
Our next question comes from Paul Holden with CIBC World Markets. Please proceed.
Thank you. Good afternoon. So first question goes back to the PNC business and the expected normalization there. I'm assuming some of the positive experience in the quarter is attributable to the auto business specifically, so maybe you can address that and address in terms of the normalization some of the cost inflation we're seeing in the industry, and particularly out of the U.S. auto insurers. It seems to be a major talking point for this quarter. You didn't see that. Do you expect to see it in future quarters?
In PNC, we're back to pre-pandemic driving behaviors. So you see there are results that are in line, slightly better than expected, but it's mostly on home insurance that we've seen some positive increases of profitability.
Got it. Okay. Second question is related to the organic capital generation. Came in at $150 million this quarter versus the normalized expected run rate of $75 million. So wondering, what is accounting for that extra 75? And then two, given the type of growth you're putting up in these capital light businesses, would suggest there's some kind of upside to your current guidance range. So maybe you can address that as well.
Well, it's Jacques speaking. Actually, the organic capital generation, there's four items to it. First one, profit. Profit has been great since the beginning of the year, and we intend that it will continue in the future. Second item is the mix of business, like you just said, and capital light businesses. If you look at our sales results since the beginning of the year, mutual fund, low guarantee seg fund, as well as the dealer business in U.S., they are all on fire, and it's helping a lot. And even when we look at individual insurance, the mix is favorable so far. So we'll try to continue to work to that it will continue to go that way for sure. And the third one is the economic condition. And on that, I will refer you to look at the seg fund guarantee risk on the rolling nine. You will see that last year, actually, we have to put more capital aside to support those guarantees, while this year is completely the reverse. And it has to do, actually, with the good economic condition, the increase in long-term interest rate in Q1, and the good market performance. That's another thing. And the fourth element is the management actions we're doing every quarter to keep our risk profile within our risk appetite and tolerances. And some of those transactions may need some required capital to support them. Some of them may be neutral, some of them may be positive. And since the beginning of the year, actually, the first two quarters, we were those transactions were requiring some capital, while in Q3 they were neutral. So though all the four elements were very positive in Q3. When I look for next year, I can say that it will be much larger. Our expectation will be that I'm touching wood here, that market condition will continue, economic condition will continue, and if we keep the pace with that mix of business, we can, I would say, guide towards something like 450, 500 million of organic capital generation for 2023.
450 to 550. Okay, so that's a pretty significant increase versus current guidance. Interesting. Okay, that's great, and I think that's all the questions I had. Thank you.
Our next question comes from Lamar Persaud with Cormark Securities. Please proceed.
Hi, my question is on the group insurance business and what drove flat car loan originations this quarter. I guess I would have expected more of a slowdown reflecting some of the inventory issues. So maybe you could touch on that and then, you know, offer some commentary on the outlook heading into Q4 and into 2022 and, you know, maybe give us an update of when you think these inventory shortages might be coming to an end. Is it a 2022 or 2023 and beyond issue? So a lot in there. So hoping any color would be helpful.
Hello, this is François here. So on the sales side, we did see some slowdowns in Q3 with loan originations and as well on the insurance and warranty side for the car insurance. So although July was pretty positive, then we saw the most part of the slowdown happening after that. And we do expect that it will linger in Q4 and beginning of in Q1 as well in 2022, with some more getting back to normalcy after this rough patch.
Okay, so it's likely going to continue in 2022, and
Well, it's very dependent on the car sales as well. Yeah, so we know that for the next two quarters, you know, it's going to be some softening. But we believe that it's going to be back to normal, you know, somewhere in 2022. We don't see any reason why our competitive, let's say, positioning would deteriorate at that point.
Okay, great. Thank you.
Our next question comes from Mario Mendonca with TD Securities. Please proceed.
Good afternoon. This might be best for Jacques. When I learn about a company benefiting, let's say, from much lower credit losses in the auto business or really good claims experience in P&C, my mind immediately goes to what is the company doing to prepare for the flip side. So as it relates to the credit insurance, is there anywhere in the disclosure where the company talks about the level of allowances relative to those loans? I see $1.049 billion in auto non-prime finance receivables in dealer services, which of course are the car loans. Does the company disclose anywhere what the level of allowances the company holds against those loans and how that's changed over time?
It's Denis here. I think I'll take that question because I was there when we started. We entered that business. I'm the cause of this, I guess. You know, the expectation for us going forward is a credit loss of about 5%. I mean, on the long-term basis, that's what we think we would get out of the quality of the portfolio we have. And you may remember when we bought CTL, we were much above the 5%, something around 8%, because at the beginning we were more on the subprime side, and then we moved towards more the near prime as opposed to a subprime. So the expectation is something around 5%. So the idea right now is that we are at 2.4, but we believe that it will gradually go back to the 5%. And obviously the provisioning or allowance will adjust as we go there. It's going to take some time to get there. So that's basically how I see this moving forward.
Denis, does the company currently apply IFRS 9 to this loan book?
I think I'll leave Jacques on that question.
Okay.
So, okay, maybe my mic was closed. Sorry for that. The answer is no.
So, presumably the company will apply IFRS 9 in 2023 in conjunction with IFRS 17. Is that the expectation?
You're correct.
Okay, so as of right now, there are no performing loan reserves against that book of business. Is that right?
We have provision. We have provision, but the provision is not billed the same way as under. It's not pro-cyclical as it is for IFRS 9. You know IFRS 9, what it will bring to the table. As soon as you have a short-term, I would say, bad experience, you have to assume that bad experience will last forever. The reverse, if it's good. Now, what we have is a provision that has more a long-term, mid-term view. So this is more stable, but we have a provision.
So am I correct to assume that right now the company doesn't disclose what the provision is or the allowance against that book? That's not disclosure that you're prepared to provide?
No, we have not provided it. What we have provided is more the extra provision we put in place last year because of COVID.
Okay, and a similar question as it relates to the P&C business. The claims have been very good. What I'd like to know is, has the experience even been that much better and the company's building up some IBNR in anticipation of a deterioration in claims experience? Like, where does the reserves for prior year development, where does that sit in the P&C business? Have you been setting aside additional reserves to prepare for the reversal?
Actually, this is annual pricing policy. Those policies are repriced every year, so it's not long-term policies. So what we have right now is provision according to the actuary standard. So that's the way we manage the business. And what will happen next year will be a return to normality. François was referring that on the auto side, we have returned to reality. But we will see where it will come there. But actually, there's no pressure on pricing. I would say that the most important thing is probably pressure on pricing from competition that may reduce the profit. And we are not seeing that for the moment.
And my final question is a more broad, general question. The interest rates have become a lot more volatile recently, and expectations for the short end have moved a fair bit in the last few weeks in Canada and even around the world. I want to resist the temptation to assume that higher rates are always necessarily good for life insurance companies. Is there anything you want to alert us to about this volatility that could impact the company in 2022, either in terms of policy or anything else?
Yeah, actually, we have the risk of our position. For sure, 2022, we will transition to IFRS 17, which is something that is important. But the most important thing for life insurance, we have very long-term commitment to policyholders, so a rise in long-term interest rate will be beneficial. Sometimes it doesn't show on the metric. We could just remember what happened in Q1 when our ratio reduced, when interest rate increased. But over the long term, it's really positive.
Okay, thank you.
You're welcome.
Our next question comes from Darko Mihalic with RBC Capital Markets. Please proceed.
Hi, thank you. Just quickly want to return to Mike, your comment on the third-party sales synergy between IAS and DAC this quarter. Is that like a one-and-done kind of synergy, or will there be improved sales from here on in?
Yeah, good question, Darko. It is from a sales reporting standpoint, we pick up additional sales this year and in future years, but there's no more growth. Like, it'll carry on going forward. But in my mind, the real synergy is on the profit, which is amortized over the lifetime of the contract. So there will be ongoing growth and profit over the next 4 or 5 years, is the way I look at it. Jacques, you might want to add a comment there.
Nothing to add, Mike.
Okay.
Okay, thank you for that. And then just a follow-up, and this question is for Denny. Denny, when I, you know, going back to some of the questions that were thrown at you today, with respect to the sort of the long-term strategy of how you're building your company, you know, where I sit, when I look at all of the life insurance companies that operate out of Canada, all of them have been deploying capital in capital-light businesses. All of them, to some degree or another, have been reducing long-tail insurance. I think of Great West with the big reinsurance. I think of Sun Life exiting annuities. I think of Manulife exiting many legacy businesses that are long-tail in nature, and building wealth businesses and other capital-light. So I guess, you know, when I look at what you've been doing recently, it also seems to be going down that path. And so I guess the question is, you know, you mentioned that you're still like a long-term, you're still like the long-term business, but all things considered, are you not going down the path? Like, why not commit to going down, to suggesting that you are going down the path of going to shorter tail business, fee business, and away from the long tail, long-term life insurance business?
So I will make a couple of distinctions. This is a great question, Darko. Yes, we are going into the capital light business. But that does not mean that we go away from individual insurance business, for example, which are like long-term business. The idea is risk management. Who's bearing the risk at the end of the day? And there are products in the life insurance world, for example, where the risk is being borne by the client or is being shared by the client and the company. So the idea for us is to move away as much as possible from high capital intensive business, which some of them, I mean, the low capital business could be also a long-term business, okay? You see my point? There's a nuance here that is important. We are leaders in sectors where we have long-term business, and we're going to stay in those businesses. But at the same time, we want to develop businesses that are capital light. Some of them are, let's say, short-term in their nature. So that's the way you should look at it. I mean, and it pays off. When you look at the ROE that we are generating this year, it's no coincidence. It's not luck. It's the fact that we have chosen over the years to move away from, let's say, long-term guarantee product with high capital, very intensive product. Because of the accounting and regulatory regime, which is long-term guarantee.
Okay, that's a fair point with the nuance. I get that. My last question is just a very quick follow-up to Jacques. Jacques, you mentioned in your prepared remarks that, you know, you were looking at IFRS 17 carefully with respect to strain. You know, maybe we can follow up offline, but my understanding is strain is strain. You may call the contract onerous under IFRS 17, but really there's no difference given the fact that you produce strain now. I mean, strain will come through as strain in IFRS 17. So what in particular are you alluding to with respect to that changeover and with respect to strain?
Actually, there are different moving parts when we will transition to IFRS 17. There's the CSM that you're not allowed to front-end profit, but for us, there are also other elements like we no longer require to keep the stock market protection, we don't need to have a margin for interest rate risk, and non-attributable expenses. So overall, when we look at the situation, we are quite confident that the level of strain we're having here will be pretty much the same level of strain we will have when we will look at our contract. We don't have that many contracts that are qualified as onerous. So that's really where we are sitting. And we have been prudent over the previous years because of that fact. We didn't want to be in a situation where we will reverse the profit.
Okay, thanks. I think maybe we'll follow up on that. Thanks very much, Jacques. I appreciate that.
You're welcome.
We have a follow-up from Gabriel Deschênes with National Bank Financial.
Hey, I just want to clarify something you mentioned earlier, Jacques. So I'm talking about this year's profits running, you know, above the target range pretty consistently, but also cautioning that, you know, 10% growth off of, you know, what annualized EPS could be is probably a bit more optimistic. But I was more interested in hearing about the, you know, how you get to the low end of next year's range. You would use the midpoint of this year's target range, which is around 790, and grow that by 10%, and that would be the low end of next year's range, roughly?
No, actually, I'm sorry if it came across like that. That's not what I intended to do. I was just giving, the guidance would be provided in Q4, in February, when we will table our Q4 result. I was just trying to give you an idea about what could be a low and what could be a high, but it won't be the guidance. The guidance will be worked on during Q4 and table in February.
Another way to look at it is that, you know, traditionally we said in some years that the guidance was last year guidance increased by 10%. Okay, so if you do that this year, that would be way too low, because there are some benefits that we've encountered this year, and we're saying that it would be way too conservative to do that. On the other hand, if you take the actual results of 2021 projected, let's say with the high end of the range for Q4, and you add 10% out of it, that would be probably too much. So you see the point right here?
I see that point. I was just trying to get to how you formulate your guidance for next year, like based off of guidance from
we don't formulate it. It's going to be in Q4.
okay, all right. Thanks, but I never mind. Thanks, bye.
Mr. Ricard, there are no further questions at this time.
Thank you. Thanks a lot for being at that call. It's funny because I haven't got any questions about capital allocation, which I guess I will take advantage of my concluding remarks to just talk a bit about it. As you've heard and seen, our generation of capital is very, very strong, and it's going to be strong next year thanks to the initiatives we took to move away from capital-intensive business. So the idea for us, obviously, is to focus on growth, because organic growth, because of our current businesses are bringing very, very interesting, ROE. And obviously, whenever the restrictions on capital, on dividend is lifted, we will increase the dividend. So if for any reason, whether this week or next week or in a month, the regulator lifted their restrictions, next quarter, we're going to increase the dividend, and our intention is to move towards close to the or at the center of the mid of our range, mid target of our, how do you say that, in the middle of our target range, based on core earnings. NCIB, I guess that's the last resort to some extent, and obviously we are continuously looking at opportunities, acquisition, and we've just announced one. So nothing major, I guess, for the next year in my radar, but certainly something we are always looking at. So that concludes this conference. Thanks. And I think that Marie-Annick Bonneau is going to continue. She's got a message for you guys.
Yeah, so in closing, I just want to draw your attention on the date of our next disclosure. Indeed, our Q4 2021 results will be released on February 16, 2022, after market close, and the conference call will be held on the following day, February 17, 2022. So this now concludes the call. Thank you all.
That does conclude the conference call for today. We thank you for your participation and ask that you please disconnect your line.